It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The last time Congress passed legislation to increase the minimum wage was in 2007. The wage hikes topped out at $7.25 an hour in 2009 and have not increased nationally or in Pennsylvania since. But if a bill to raise the minimum wage is passed by Congress in 2014, the minimum wage would go up to $9.80 an hour. That may seem like a lot, but it's actually less than what it was 45 years ago. I'll explain. The minimum wage was $1.60 in 1968, but that would equate to $10.55 in today's dollars, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator. So the questions are these. Can the minimum wage be made a living wage? And if so, will it help or hurt the economy? I'm joined now by phone from Harrisburg by Mark Price, a labor economist at the Keystone Research Center in Harrisburg. Mark Price, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul. It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
And if you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation by calling us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Should the minimum wage be raised? 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Mark Price, let's start by having you explain how the minimum wage is determined. How is that done? Because it seems pretty haphazard. There doesn't seem to be any set way, any sort of automatic triggers for the minimum wage being raised.
That's right. Basically, to raise the federal minimum wage in the United States, you need an act of Congress. So the House and the Senate have to agree to a bill and set a level for the minimum wage, and then you have to have a president willing to sign that bill. And so over time, at least since the 1970s in the United States, Congress and the president have agreed much less often than they used to when to raise the minimum wage. In that period prior to that, from in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, Congress and the president on a pretty regular basis would act to raise the minimum wage over time, so that when we look back at that era, what you see is that as productivity in the U.S. economy was growing over time, as the amount of stuff we were making and wealth we were creating, as that was growing, the minimum wage actually kept pace with that growth. It grew in the same percentage terms as productivity grew in the economy. And that sort of reflects a kind of a consensus in that era when the view was those least fortunate among us, those at the very bottom of the labor market, should enjoy and share in the prosperity of the broader economy. They shouldn't be left behind. Those folks who are doing much better in other parts of the economy. And so the minimum wage was raised on a regular basis. Since the 1980s, that consensus certainly has broken down. It's been much harder to get a bill out of Congress to raise the wage. And so what's happened is prices, the increase in prices, consumer prices that we all pay, have risen and steadily sort of eroded the purchasing power, so that minimum wage workers today are much less well off and can buy a lot fewer goods than they used to, say, in the 1960s.
Now, we hear different terms. For example, there is the minimum wage, and everybody pretty much knows what that is. But there's also the term that we sometimes hear, a living wage. What is the difference between a living wage and the minimum wage?
Well, that's an excellent question, and actually a very hard question. I think often in public and in policy debates, the two terms get used interchangeably, and for good reason. What people really mean when they say living wage, they mean to imply that what wages are now, right, just aren't enough to get by. They don't cover the essential costs of housing, of health care, of child care. And so when they call for a living wage, that's really what they're asking, is that whatever the minimum wage is or whatever the wage level that they're asking for, that it rise to reflect the cost of living. The minimum wage has more of a concrete meaning, right? It's what it is, what Congress and the president have decided it to be. And sometimes, you know, especially in Pittsburgh, many of your listeners will know that there have been living wage ordinances in the city where the city council has been involved. Sometimes living wage ordinances really are laws, again, targeted at the idea that some workers in the economy aren't making enough to get by, and it attempts to legislate that they have to be earned higher wages. For instance, contractors who provide services to city governments often have the benefit of what are called living wage ordinances, which simply mandate that the wages that are paid be higher than the minimum wage. You know, what that, how much higher is, it'll depend on the city and the law in question. But so the term is very amorphous, but I think most people get when folks say living wage, they really mean, you know, that whatever the current minimum wage is, it isn't enough to get by, especially for families.
So what legislation has been created to raise the minimum wage? I mentioned Congress was looking at it. We may see something, we may see the minimum wage raised for the first time in what would be 7 years in 2014.
Well, you cited the main piece of legislation, the Fair Minimum Wage Act. There was an act in 2012. There's another version of it in 2013. I think realistically, it's a heavy lift to see that that's going to pass out of the current Congress. It doesn't look like there are enough folks in the House of Representatives to support that bill. Although, you know, one can always hope. And so that Fair Minimum Wage Act is mainly the main bill that will raise the federal minimum wage. But again, its life is pretty tenuous because, as I'm sure you're well aware, most of your listeners are well aware, getting any legislation out of Congress in the last year and a half has been quite difficult because it is a divided Congress with Democrats in control of the Senate and Republicans in control of the House. So it's been very difficult to come to agreement on even just paying the country's debt, let alone something like raising the minimum wage.
The president is in support of raising the minimum wage. Certainly, people in Congress are divided on the issue. One of the arguments that comes up is that the minimum wage isn't necessarily designed to be a living wage, that the minimum wage is not designed to be a living wage, and that if someone doesn't like what they're being paid, if they're being paid minimum wage in a job they're working, say, at a place like McDonald's, that they don't have to stay there. They can just go find another job somewhere that pays more. When you hear that kind of argument, what is your reaction to it?
Well, I think I understand the argument, but I think the reality for most workers is that they tend to get trapped, not simply in fast food jobs, but in low-wage jobs in general. So when we at the Keystone Research Center looked at this issue a few years ago before the 2007 minimum wage increase, we did find a significant portion of folks who were sort of at the bottom of the labor market who couldn't didn't earn a lot or were earning the minimum wage, they tended to stay there over the course of a decade. And so that's our concern, really goes back to the elements you laid out in your introduction, which is that because of really dysfunction in a way, in that Congress hasn't acted to regularly raise the minimum wage, workers at the bottom have been made worse off over time. And what we would like to see is some sort of agreement emerge that we're going to hold steady the minimum wage. We're not going to allow its purchasing power to decline over time. It's certainly not appropriate or fair or ultimately economically healthy to allow the minimum wage to lose purchasing power as it has over the last several decades. It really makes workers worse off. It actually discourages innovation. You know, one of the great benefits, it's also scary sometimes, of higher wages is it encourages innovation in the economy. It encourages new technological innovation, ways to save on labor. And that actually, over the long run, has actually been pretty healthy for the U.S. economy. Remember, we are still in the wake of a very deep recession, and we have high unemployment. So that makes people a little more sensitive to things like technological change. But that's a function of the business cycle and again, unfortunately, failure in Congress to appropriately deal with that issue. But in the long run, technological progress is good, and it generates rising incomes and rising wages, or at least it should. It's just, unfortunately, it has to be matched with good policies, like a minimum wage that doesn't lose value. Because what you want as our society grows, as that technological innovation happens, you want incomes to grow across the board, not just for folks at the top. and minimum wage is an important part of that policy. And if you don't raise the minimum wage to reflect the rise in prices over time, you end up pushing more and more people over time into poverty, which I think ultimately most people would agree is a bad policy. You really want folks, if they're going to make the choice to work, whatever that work is, it should provide a very basic minimum standard of living. And our argument essentially is that over time, we're providing less and less of a basic standard, and that's inappropriate and wrong and ultimately hurtful for everyone.
We have seen over the years people in Congress really champion raising the minimum wage and make it an issue and tie in a moral aspect to it, as you say, to at least create the perception that we're trying to prevent people from falling into poverty. Why wouldn't and why haven't the people who are pushing for raising the minimum wage said, and we in addition to raising it, we have to tie it to inflation so that, for example, we're keeping up with what the minimum wage was in 1968 in dollars and cents, much less than it is now, but at $1.60, it was keeping up with inflation, that it was, in fact, in 2013 dollars, $10.55, but that raising it now to $9.80 an hour is actually not keeping up with inflation.
No, I think that's a wonderful point. And there have been certain cases where Alan Grayson, a congressman, introduced a bill that very much along those lines at one point in Congress. So there have been people who do that. I think what happens, and maybe to illustrate it, they'll use Pennsylvania as an example. You may remember that Pennsylvania moved to raise the minimum wage in this state before the last increase. So we actually raised it to $7.15 before the federal minimum wage went up to $7.25. So there was a brief period where Pennsylvania policymakers came together and the governor signed a bill that mandated the minimum wage would be higher here. In that initial run-up to the campaign, really, to get that wage, what was initially asked for was not only an increase to $7.15, but also that the minimum wage in Pennsylvania be indexed to inflation, as it is in some other states like Washington and Oregon. And ultimately, you know, when you're trying to get a bill through any legislative body, whether it's the U.S. Congress or the Pennsylvania legislature, there is some horse trading that goes on. And in the case of the Pennsylvania minimum wage, it was easier to get a majority to vote for an increase to $7.15 that didn't also include an inflation adjustment. So in a lot of ways, what's happened over time is it's a little bit of horse trading, that in order to get an increase now, folks have been asked to give up eliminating the problem altogether, which is having a reasonable and justifiable inflation adjustment. So it's some of it's horse trading. Whether that's been good or bad, I'll leave it to others to decide. But certainly there have been folks who've moved, and many states through public referenda have voted not only to raise the minimum wage, but also to index it to inflation. So it's been done. It just hasn't been done yet at the national level and certainly in Pennsylvania yet.
It's Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Mark Price, a labor economist at the Keystone Research Center, joining us by phone from Harrisburg. If you have a comment or question, would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Should the minimum wage be raised? And we'd like to hear from you if you are making minimum wage. What's it like for you to get the bills paid? Are you able to survive with just your one minimum wage job, or do you have to work an additional job or jobs to make ends meet? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002 if you'd like to get in on the conversation with ICE. And Mark, the minimum wage is often discussed as a burden to small business. The thinking goes that if the minimum wage is raised, there's a big question about whether small business would be able to afford to hire people. What about that argument?
Well, I think, you know, I would say two things. I mean, on the one hand, we've, you know, there's been a fair amount of effort to sort of see what we can find in the data with respect to, does this, is this a law that ultimately harms a certain size of business. And I think it's important to note that much of that research hasn't discovered that there's a large negative impact on small businesses themselves. And I think most of your listeners will probably recognize that a lot of the places where they encounter minimum wage workers, if they do, are actually tend to be these large multinational corporations. Places like Walmart and larger chains that tend to actually often pay a minimum wage. So we have research that basically shows that it doesn't seem to show up as a disadvantage for many small businesses overall. That said, you do want to remember that we live in a very complex economy, that there are thousands of prices that any business owner has to deal with, and not just the minimum wage, but the price of food, the price of gasoline, the price of other forms of energy, and those fluctuate. And so you can tell a story that makes complete sense, that there is going to be a certain employer who a minimum wage increase ultimately is sort of like the last straw. It's the last thing that they, a good example might be a local pizza shop, right, where they have a disadvantage. They don't have a big distributional network like Pizza Hut or Papa John's, so they're paying higher prices for their inputs.
And there are actually a lot of those type of pizza places in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. And if those pizza places are competing where they're trying to charge, a dollar less than Papa John's or a dollar less than Pizza Hut, and then they get hit by a minimum wage, that's going to be tough for those operations to beat, especially if they're not delivering a pizza that's better than what you could get at a Papa John's or a Pizza Hut. So you can tell a story where maybe some smaller operators in some circumstances just end up not being able to compete, and so they get swallowed up by maybe local competition. But just thinking of myself, I regularly would pay a lot more for a pizza if it tastes better than what I can get at the local Pizza Hut or the Papa John's. So a lot of businesses that do succeed, ultimately, they have to focus on being more efficient, focus on delivering a better product than what they could get at a large chain. So I think logically you recognize there's some employers that are going to struggle. Overall, there's not a lot of evidence that, systematically small businesses are hurt by minimum wage increase, because many of them often also pay higher wages than their larger competitors, because they're able to, innovate in a way and find a niche.
Now, we were talking earlier about tying the minimum wage to inflation. And how often, if this were successfully done, how often would the minimum wage have to be raised in order to keep up with inflation?
The typical way it's done is you would raise it each year on an annual basis. So you would know, you would tie it to a product that's produced by the Bureau of Labor Statistics that tells you how consumer prices changed in the last year. And those prices generally go up. Right now, they're not increasing very much at all, but they're somewhere in the range of 1-2% a year is the overall increase in consumer prices. So where the minimum wage has been indexed, that's what you would have, is someone would calculate what the rate of inflation was in the last year, and then on a certain, the minimum wage would be raised by a few cents to accommodate that increase. So you would usually do it on an annual basis.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation with our guest, Mark Price, labor economist at the Keystone Research Center in Harrisburg. We have Nelson from South Park joining us. Nelson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello.
Hi, Nelson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Go ahead with go ahead,
now,
please.
I had missed the beginning about Congress talking about $9 an hour, and my comment was about the striker for 15. I mean, like, that would be good. I've worked in fast food, and I feel like that's too much to ask for, because I work in labor now and I make about $15. But for fast food work, like, I think the minimum wage should be raised to, at least $10.
Right. It would be, if you wanted to keep up with inflation, it would be $10.55. If you're equating it to a wage that would be a living wage, if you will. But the proposal in Congress is $9.80 an hour. You're referring to Nelson, to the people that were demonstrating in front of the McDonald's earlier this summer? And what about I'll ask Mark Price this question. What about what Nelson is saying? And, you know, should there maybe be a minimum wage for different jobs? That sounds like what you're essentially asking. You're saying if you're working at McDonald's, Nelson, $10 an hour or $10.55 is just fine.
Yeah, because it's not the point I thought of, but that is a good point.
But you're saying it shouldn't be 15, even though that's what those workers are saying it should be. So, Mark, you know, where is the dollar amount that makes sense?
Oh, good question. Thank you, Nelson, for calling in and asking that. I think, you know, another metric that would help sort of bound the conversation a little bit is to think about other ways in which you could set the level of the minimum wage. One of them would be, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that in the era from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, the minimum wage was raised on a regular basis so that it grew basically in concert with the rise in productivity growth, so that as society became wealthier, it by the same amount the minimum wage was going up, or the same percentage amount. So if we use that metric, you're talking about the current minimum wage being somewhere between $15 and $20 an hour. So I think it's a good reasonable conversation to say, somewhere between $20 an hour and $10 an hour is a reasonable sort of point to have a discussion about, you know, what makes sense. I think as an economist, I would advise that you couldn't, for instance, go to $15 an hour today. That would cause a lot of disruption. That would be much more likely than more modest increases to possibly cause some job loss and hurt small employers and large employers. So what you want to do is stage increases over time so that you spread them out. And you slowly get to whatever the minimum wage you choose to target. But I think, you know, in my view, somewhere between $10 an hour and $20, somewhere in that range sounds reasonable, as long as we're careful about it, as long as we sort of, you know, set a nice, simple, you know, $1 to $2 a year increase to get to whatever the final level is. And, you know, it's also an interesting idea to think about, you know, what minimum wage should be in different types of industries, because certainly a minimum wage would probably be higher in an industry like construction than it would be in an industry like fast food. So you could try to take into account differences in productivity in individual industries and use that to set the minimum wage. But I think where the debate remains is really to talk about, you know, setting the minimum wage for all work somewhere between $10 an hour and 15 at least, if you take the calls of the folks who've been striking at the fast food restaurants.
Let's take another call from Sam in Pittsburgh. Sam, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for having me and taking my question here.
You bet.
I'm with the Service Employees International Union, Local 32PJ. We actually had a lot of our members participating in the demonstrations that took place in Pittsburgh on July 24th to raise the minimum wage. And, you know, I guess I have more of a comment than a question, but we've, in Pittsburgh, received a whole lot of well-deserved attention for the fact that the city has weathered the downturn in the economy better than most places in the country. Upward social mobility, economic mobility is greater here than in most Rust Belt cities, for example. And there's a number of good reasons for that, but among them, frankly, are the presence here of, more decent unionized jobs in the service industry than in most cities in the country. If janitors in downtown Pittsburgh, for example, making over $15 an hour, you know, workers in the hospitality industry are largely unionized. Folks who work in grocery stores here are largely unionized. And that creates the presence of, you know, thousands of decent, you know, what we'd call living wage jobs in the city. But the concern that our members and others have is that, you know, the jobs that are growing, the places where, you know, our members, neighbors, and others can only turn to work, are in places like McDonald's and Walmart and Target, and often publicly subsidized developments, where what exists are low-wage poverty jobs. And it's not the local pizza shops that's the biggest concern. It's the places where we're creating the most jobs in our economy, and that people simply can't afford to live on. That's why workers at fast food restaurants around the country are standing up and saying we can't take it anymore. And that's why hundreds of people in Pittsburgh last week were out in the streets saying we got to raise the minimum wage.
Well, Sam, you raise an interesting point, and certainly the job numbers from late last week indicate that the growth, the increase that we're seeing in jobs is in low-paying jobs in which people might not be able to make ends meet. Nelson, what about Sam's point? I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm looking at the screen and seeing the name of a caller. Mark.
No,
Price.
No, you're fine.
Mark
you're
Price.
Fine.
What about Sam's point?
No, I think Sam makes a really probably the most important point that really could come out of this. That certainly it would be good to see a minimum wage increase, but really what you want, especially if you want to get back to Nelson's idea, maybe suggesting that certain types of employers should pay higher wages, we actually do have a pretty good model for that in the U.S. economy, and it's called a union. That unions are very good and effective at making sure that when a company is prosperous and profitable, that those higher profits show up in the form of higher wages for their workers. And like Sam said, Pittsburgh is a very good example, especially for certain types of service work. Grocery store employees, janitors in the city of Pittsburgh earn not necessarily always living wages, but certainly they have a better standard of living than a lot of similarly skilled workers in other major cities. And that's really because they've got a union and they negotiate and they find ways to both, help their employers prosper, but also make sure that prosperity trickles down. So I think unions really are the key. My boss here at the Keystone Research Center, he wrote, just a week or so ago, sort of making this point that what we really need, especially in fast food, are sort of, this is a product that's it's a service. It's not exportable. You can't buy a Big Mac in China. It's going to be sold somewhere in the city of Pittsburgh. And so what you really need are unions that represent really a union that represents all fast food workers in a particular region or city, because they'll be effective both of making sure that employers, in the American model, employers are entitled to profit and higher revenue, but in general, they should share that increase in that productivity growth with their workers, and that's certainly a good way to do it. And I would probably say we want a combination of a higher minimum wage and greater unionization in the economy. Again, though, those are two very heavy lifts right now.
Mark Price, our guest, a labor economist at the Keystone Research Center in Harrisburg, joining us by phone. Mark, pleasure having you on the program. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul, it was great. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at the recent global travel warning and the closure of embassies around the world by the United States with former U.S. Ambassador Dan Simpson. That's next on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.